DR Power Equipment is the industry leader in field and brush mowers. Their full line of machines are designed to clear acres of tough weeds, woody brush, and saplings up to 3 inches thick, hour after hour, year after year. Just one mow, and you'll agree nothing stops at DR. Visit drpower.com to learn more and shop the sale today.
News Talk Breakfast with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman.
In association with AIR.
On News Talk.
First, my next guest has witnessed the appalling hospital conditions in Gaza on his last visit, and there is no doubt that in the intervening time, a couple of months, that things have become much worse. We're joined on the line by Professor Nick Maynard, a consultant gastroenterologist surgeon from Oxford. Nick, good morning and welcome.
Good morning. Thank you very much for asking me on today.
Now, first of all, when were you last there?
I left Gaza on the 9th of January and I'm due to go back in 2 or 3 weeks' time.
And we know that things have deteriorated with the escalation of the activities of the IDF in the intervening couple of months. So what did you see in January?
I saw the most appalling and horrific injuries from the attacks by the IDF, mainly in children. I saw terrible burns which were so awful you could sometimes see the facial bones through the burns, many traumatic amputations of arms and legs. I spent 2 weeks operating almost every day on severe blast injuries to the abdomen and the chest. And the sheer volume of the casualties coming into Al-Aqsa Hospital completely overwhelmed the system, completely overwhelmed the capacity of the hospital. So it was impossible to really prioritise cases that needed to go to theatre. The triage process had collapsed and it was almost, in some ways, almost a bit of a lottery as to who was going to get surgery because there were so many casualties coming in. It was something the like of which I've never, ever seen in my many years as a doctor.
Now, this had not been your first visit to Gaza. So before October 7th and the events that followed, what was the medical service like in the Strip?
It was always challenging. I've been visiting Gaza frequently. I've had many trips since 2010. It's always a challenging place to work. I have never been to Gaza when there hasn't been aerial bombardments and the IDF. So it's a way of life for them being bombed. I've seen it every single visit since 2010. And the healthcare system is challenging to work in. They have some wonderfully talented and bright doctors and nurses and other healthcare workers. So they're not lacking in skill, but they are lacking in resources. And most of the time there are enough resources to carry out the treatments you want to. But you know that stocks are always low. Electricity may run out at any minute or be cut off by the Israelis at any minute. So it's a very challenging healthcare environment. But it was what they were used to, we were used to visiting. It's what I often call normal Gaza. It's not normal by anyone else's standards, but it's what everyone was used to. But what has happened since October the 7th has been on a different level completely.
Now, before the war, who was supplying all of the medicines and equipment that any healthcare system would need?
It was all controlled by the Israeli government, what could come in, what couldn't come in. So the hospitals, the whole healthcare system was totally reliant upon what was allowed in by the Israeli government. And we've probably heard these figures over the months that on average about 500 trucks a day went into Gaza from Israel, providing all the resources that were needed. And of course, none of, or very much less than that, has been going in recent months. So they have run out of many vital equipment and medicines.
Now, the attitude of the Israelis to the Palestinians, I mean, there is no doubt that they see Hamas as a singular threat, an existential threat to the state of Israel. But of course, Hamas is a small fraction of the population that lives in Gaza. Did you detect an antipathy to ordinary people on the part of the Israelis?
Most certainly. I mean, these people have lived there all their lives. under occupation. So there's huge resentment towards the Israelis for being forced to live under these conditions. But that doesn't mean they support what Hamas did on October the 7th. And the many people I spoke to when I was out there, the many people I've spoken to on the phone or via messaging services, are appalled by those events. But of course, they can't be considered in a vacuum. They have been besieged, occupied for many, many years. And any consideration of what's going on now needs to be considered in that context.
Now, what do you make of the Israeli contention that the rules of war permit them to attack medical facilities when those facilities are being used basically as human shields to prevent the very military activity that might be required to root out the opposing force?
Yeah, I'm clearly not a lawyer, so I can't really comment on international law. What I can say is that in my experience, and I can only really talk about my experience and the experience of those close to me, I have never seen any evidence of Hamas militants in the hospitals I've worked in. During my spell at Al-Aqsa Hospital a few weeks ago, I spent 2 weeks in the hospital all the time. I went to every part of the hospital. There was no restricted access. I never saw any evidence of any Hamas militants. And indeed, over the years I've been going to Gaza, particularly in Shifa Hospital, which has often been quoted as being the main Hamas command centre, I never saw any evidence of any Hamas militants in the hospital. I had unlimited access to every single part of the hospital. So I've certainly never witnessed what they are claiming. And perhaps more importantly, those people I've known and considered to be friends and family for many, many years and whom I would trust implicitly, but and have lived in these hospitals for many years, have never seen any evidence of that. So I've not witnessed it. I don't think any of the evidence put forward by the Israeli Defense Force to support those claims has any credibility at all.
For almost 40 years, DR Power Equipment has been the go-to for homeowners who want professional-level outdoor power equipment. Whether you're managing acres of overgrown fields or just want to have the best lawn on the block, DR Power has everything you need to conquer your piece of the outdoors. Visit drpower.com today to learn more and shop the sale.
Now, they did claim when they withdrew from Al-Shifa last week that they had killed something like 200 of Hamas's personnel and that they deemed the operation to be over and a success. When we saw the pictures, though, of the hospital itself, there's little enough of it standing.
Well, there's none of it standing. They've destroyed not just the buildings, they've destroyed the whole infrastructure. They've destroyed the laboratories, the scanning units, the fuel depots, the oxygen tanks. And of course, they've also discovered many dead bodies, many of them with hands handcuffed behind their backs. I know of doctors who have been executed in the last week in Shifa Hospital. One of them, a young plastic surgeon who I knew, and his mother, who was a doctor in the hospital, both of them killed. So I think there seems to be very clear evidence of appalling atrocities having been carried out.
When you say they were executed, I mean, we're not talking, therefore, about collateral damage caught up in a blast, or is that what you mean? Or were they singled out and shot?
I have heard many audio and seen many video testimonies from doctors and healthcare workers I know very well, giving evidence that these people have been summarily executed and not victims of collateral damage. And indeed, doctors I know have collected a incredibly detailed dossier of the detailed investigations that have been carried out into these individuals who've been killed, and many of whom have been abducted as well.
Now, obviously, doctors who worked in Northern Ireland over the years have seen the terrible damage that bombs can cause and so on. But the scale of what's going on in Gaza, I'm not sure how you prepare to deal with the results of an explosion that may kill dozens and maim many dozens more. What in your medical career prepares you for that?
I mean, to be honest, nothing. I've never worked in a war zone. I've worked in Gaza for many years, and I've seen limited amount of bomb victims. But what I witnessed a few weeks ago was completely different to anything I've ever seen before, and it was horrific, to be honest. I mean, I hesitate to say what effect it had on me, because the effect it's had on all the people in Gaza is inestimably worse. But when I returned to the UK, in retrospect, it undoubtedly took me several weeks to really process everything I had seen. There were such awful scenes that I witnessed.
You are going to return?
I am, in a few weeks' time, yes, or to 2 or 3 weeks' time.
Now, why are you going back? I mean, it's so hopeless. I know that every individual who can lend a hand is a welcome pair of hands in that situation. But still, the idea of going and maybe not having morphine for pain relief, not having sutures to sew up wounds, all of that kind of thing. I mean, how useful can you be?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question. And I've asked myself that, and we all ask ourselves that repeatedly. I think what you imply is correct in a way, that whilst there is still such ongoing military action before a ceasefare, the amount of aid individuals like me can give is in some respects a drop in the ocean and doesn't have a huge impact. But you clearly can help individual patients, and that will make a difference. But I think it's very important that we go in there to give a message to the Gazan people that they've not been forgotten, that there are people who care about them, and that there are many, many volunteers who will go in to help to help these appalling victims of what is going on. So, and I've got many friends there, people I'd call my family, and I don't think I could look them in the eye and not go into Gaza to help them. So, yes, we may be helping only a small amount of people at the moment, but I think the bigger picture is that we are demonstrating to them that people do care, that the world has not forgotten them, and our value will be much, much greater following a ceasefire if there is a Gazan healthcare system to rebuild, which I hope there will be.
Were you frightened when you were there?
Yes. Yes, I think we were very nervous, very apprehensive. Most nights we couldn't sleep because of the sheer intensity of the bombing going on, you know, within a couple of kilometres of where we were living. I remember one night we couldn't sleep at all because there was a sustained machine gun battle going on less than a kilometre away. And it was a very surreal experience we had, but we had faith at the time in the protection we thought we would receive from the Israeli Defense Force. There's a deconfliction process which allows all foreign aid workers and humanitarian givers to have supposedly to have the confidence that where they're traveling, where they're working, is protected, is deconflicted, and every evening we would have a detailed report. Our Gazan local staff had a detailed conversation with COGAT to ensure that where we were going the next day, the hospitals we were working in, were deconflicted. Now, we had what, in retrospect, was a rather naive faith in that process, because it clearly did not work, because the Israeli Defense Force were attacking areas that were supposedly deconflicted. And I'll give you an example. The hospital I was working in, Al-Aqsa Hospital, we had to withdraw from there 2 days before the end of our mission, because one afternoon when I was operating on a severely injured young lady who had been a bomb victim in the operating theatre, the intensive care unit sustained a missile attack by the Israeli Defence Force whilst I was operating. And I came out and found out about that. The team I was leading then had to withdraw rapidly. MSF were in the hospital, they had to withdraw. And it became very obvious to us that the supposedly robust deconfliction service process simply wasn't working. And there have been many examples of direct targeting of healthcare individuals and healthcare and hospitals.
And of course, the hit on the three vehicles of World Central Kitchen, which Israel has admitted to and says it was a mistake. When you see what they could do with pinpoint accuracy in targeting Iranian senior figures in Damascus, you wonder why they don't bring the same care and attention to what they have guaranteed to people like yourself to be able to work safely.
I think that's such an important point you raise. I was there in May last year, May 23, at the beginning of May, and I was caught in the middle of the last sustained bombardment of Gaza by Israel, when there were 4 days of non-stop attacks and the country was locked down. We ended up having to be evacuated by the United Nations. And I was staying in a hotel, confined to a hotel, in the middle of Gaza City, and literally could see in the sky around me non-stop bombings going on, both from the Israeli Defense Force bombing Gaza and the Gazan rockets going over into Israel. But what we witnessed then was the incredibly precise and sophisticated targeting that the Israeli Defense Force is undoubtedly capable of. So they were taking out single floors of buildings, single rooms where they knew Islamic Jihad leaders were based, with, I wouldn't say zero collateral damage, but minimal collateral damage. So we know they can do this, and therefore it really does discredit any attempts by the Israeli Defense Force to claim that the attack on the aid workers the other day was a mistake. We've all seen the videos. There are three separate strikes. These vehicles were clearly marked, and I do not believe a word of the statements coming out of Israel is saying this was an accident and a terrible mistake.
Finally, in terms of how this might end, I mean, is this really all about Netanyahu and saving his own political skin, he thinks, because he's pushing his solid allies, mostly the United States, but the UK has been very much supporting Israel as well. He's pushing them to the limit.
He certainly is. And, you know, I'm not a politician. I don't know what his end game is, but a lot of it does seem about his survival. But I think to me, and the impressions when I was out there and to all the Gazans out there, the very clear end game that they believe is happening is the deliberate intention of the Israelis to get all the Gazans out of Gaza, to clear the country of Palestinians, whether that's confined to the northern part of the country or the whole part of the country, who knows what they'll be allowed to do. But this is more than just defeating Hamas. They are systematically destroying the whole infrastructure of the country, the whole infrastructure, the healthcare system, the education system, the agricultural system. They are making it uninhabitable.
Professor Nick Maynard, thank you very much for joining us. Before you go, I want to read a text we've got. Dr. Maynard travelled to Galway from Kinsale with his wife and back again just to speak at our rally in Galway last Saturday. He did so at his own expense, and he was so generous with his time. He spoke to everyone. He had to travel back for a family event on Saturday. He's such a genuine human being, and we were all so grateful and privileged to have him. So thanks again, Nick. That's from Hugo Seal and all of the Galway Palestinian Solidarity Campaign. So, once again, Nick, thank you for joining us on the program.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.
For almost 40 years, DR Power Equipment has been the go-to for homeowners who want professional-level outdoor power equipment. Whether you're managing acres of overgrown fields or just want to have the best lawn on the block, DR Power has everything you need to conquer your piece of the outdoors. Visit drpower.com today to learn more and shop the sale.